We'll now turn our attention to the religious tradition within which we are nestled. This week is the annual convention of the Unitarian Universalist Association, the UUA, their General Assembly. Thousands of UUs from around the country and the world are gathered in Kansas City. So we'll be sharing the sermon that Reverend Susan Frederick Gray just offered a couple hours ago. So it will take us beyond our usual time, and I expect it will be well worth it to hear from our UUA president. So, Don, if you would.
So beautiful. My fellow Unitarian Universalists, it is such a joy to be with you this morning, to be called together once again. This General Assembly represents the completion of 1 year as your president, a role in which I was charged to not just be a leader, but to also be a pastor in these difficult and painful times. All times, not just these times. I've experienced this first year as one filled with incredible gratitude because it is a gift to serve our faith in this way. It has also been a time of enormous heartbreak and challenge and urgency. A time where we are called to bear witness to so much pain, to make room in our bodies and our spirits, to hold so much of our own pain, to acknowledge the past we are coming from, and to do the work that enables us to create a new story and a new way of being from where we are now. Last August, just days after I arrived in Boston with my family, having packed up everything and moved from Phoenix, Arizona, the call came for faith leaders to show up in Charlottesville, Virginia. Local faith leaders, including Unitarian Universalists and our own Reverend Christina Rivera, called others to join them in fortifying an effort to stop white supremacist violence from descending on their town. I didn't hesitate, because at its best, our faith teaches us that the humanity of every single person is threatened when we let those who dehumanize go unchallenged. And because I know that it is not enough to intellectually want to change the world, then shrink when that call challenges us to take risks, to show up, and to sacrifice in order to protect one another. It was important to show up and follow that challenging call at the heart of our faith to embody fierceness and the fierceness of love in the face of hate and violence. Being in Charlottesville was terrifying and traumatic. All who were there, I believe, still hold the trauma of that day. A number of Unitarian Universalists were injured on the streets. Heather Heyer was killed. We're coming up on the year anniversary of Charlottesville. And the news cycle every day moves on. The latest shock or tragedy or atrocity. But it matters that we not forget what happened in Charlottesville in August 2018. For it revealed explicitly both the roots of the realities of today as well as what is at stake. The violence and dehumanization that undergirds racism, white supremacy, patriarchy, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, homophobia, transphobia, and xenophobia were all on full display at that white supremacist rally. Every single one of those things. Awful words, threats shouted at people. It made the power and renewed boldness of these movements, these white nationalist movements in our nation, undeniable. And it revealed the federal administration, the police, and the state's complicity and protection of these movements. Now, I want to be really clear. This is not about individual police officers. This is about an entire system of policing. And I want to be specific about what I mean about complicity. The night before the rally was to take place, white supremacists marched through the campus of the University of Virginia with fiery torches. They marched through the entire campus. They assaulted members of the Black Student Alliance. And they marched on to the Presbyterian Church, where faith leaders were gathered in a peaceful worship service in front of the doors so people could not leave that worship service. Throughout this, the police were nowhere. The police were similarly absent as men with long guns marched in front of the Charlottesville synagogue during services, shouting hate-filled Nazi slogans at the faithful worshipers. And in fact, the synagogue had specifically asked and been told that they would be given police protection, and no police showed up. The next morning, the police again stood back, far from the crowds. We faith leaders stood face to face with well-armed white men dressed in surplus military gear, long guns, and hundreds of rounds of ammunition. A right-wing volunteer militia supposedly policing the event. And then, when dozens and dozens of white supremacists came marching down the street, chanting and yelling, with shields and helmets and bats and sticks, coming right at the faith leaders gathered by the park, the police moved back. Violence only started when anti-fascist groups stepped forward to protect the faith leaders, when they saw the police were doing nothing and would do nothing. It was terrifying, absolutely terrifying, to see that level of armed white nationalist violence, and it was terrifying to see it go completely unchecked by police. And I own and want to name how my shock reveals my own white privilege. And hear this, my own assumption that the police are in the business of protecting me, my body, my safety. That is not an assumption that everyone gets to make. In fact, let's just take a moment and reflect on the fact that the police largely stood down to give space for armed white men to carry out intimidation and violence throughout the community of Charlottesville for days, and compare this to what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, when unarmed Black people came out to the streets to protest and mourn after the killing of the young Michael Brown, and were met with a militarized police force armed with tanks and tear gas. This is America. This is the United States. This is the disparity that brings into sharp relief the reality that Black Lives Matter organizers and immigrant rights organizers have been naming for years of the racism and broader system of white supremacy deep in our nation and deep in the foundations of our system of policing. This is not about individual officers. This is not about bad apples. This is about a system of policing that has been set up to preserve order in a system that is fundamentally disordered, unequal, untenable, and oppressive, violent, and murderous to people of color in this country. And in fact, my friends, as injustice, inequity, and disparity grow in our nation, our country, and globally, our nation's investments in policing, in jails, in weapons, and warfare all grow exponentially. Seeking to protect profit motives, seeking desperately to preserve order in this disordered system. Seeking to protect profit and the privilege of a few over human lives and human dignity. It begs the question, would we need such investments in warfare if we had justice and equity for all? Would we need those investments if justice was real for all people? That's right. We've got to deconstruct the way we look. I, as a white person, have to deconstruct the way I have seen the police. It was so important to be in Charlottesville and to be there with Unitarian Universalists from across the South and East. Y'all showed up so powerfully, so courageously, ministers and lay people who came to support the local organizations, the local congregations, and to be in solidarity and witness to the larger community. And your UUA was there as well, invisible and behind the scenes, providing support to organizers and staying after for trauma response and pastoral care to the community. This is one of the ways that we can hold each other as a collective faith in this time. And I know from my own ministry in Phoenix and in the struggle for immigrant rights and in combating the abuses of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, that the power of the UUA and our shared faith when we show up for and with one another in times of crisis is unbelievable, and it makes a difference. That was another heartbreaking thing. Those of you who know me must know how that blow felt when our president pardoned Joe Arpaio. Well, we are getting more and more opportunities to show up for and with one another, because we all know this isn't just about Charlottesville. As a people of faith that say we are committed to justice, compassion, and equity in human relations, as a faith that says we are committed to the inherent worth and dignity of all people, as a faith that says we are committed to respect for the interdependent web of all life, we have a role to play. Our faith is calling more from us in this time. And two things are absolutely clear to me right now. Number one, this is no time for a casual faith or a casual commitment to your values, your community, your church, your congregation, your soul, and your faith. No time for a casual faith. And number two, this is no time to go it alone or to think that we are in this alone. This is no time for a casual faith. As Unitarian Universalists, we are first and foremost religious communities. Religious communities that practice love as our foundation, and we are living in times of heartbreak, violence, and pain, and in this time we need communities that remind us of our humanity, because the time we are living in is incredibly dehumanizing. Not just these times, all times, but these times are urgent. These times are urgent. 50 years ago, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was asking what it would take for the United States to turn away from the giant evils of racism, militarism, and economic exploitation that he understood were deeply interrelated and infecting so much of our society. And he said that what it would take would be a powerful, unconditional, overflowing goodwill for all people, a universal love for humanity. He called this kind of love agape love. And he said it very well could be the salvation of human civilization, agape love. King said of agape love that it is the love of God operating in the human heart. Agape is the love of God operating in the human heart. I hope, you know, whatever your theology, whatever your belief or non-belief, you can hear the power of that message, of helping our hearts embody and practice a deeper, unbounded, unconditional, overflowing, audacious love for all humanity. And we need communities that teach us how to love with this fullness in the midst of the propaganda and the politics that tell our hearts to be afraid. We also need communities where we can fully bring our heartbreak in the fullness of our pain and anguish and be reminded that we are not alone, but that we are held by a love that never lets us go. And we are held by one another, and we will never let go. We need communities of both courage and deep practiced compassion, of resilience and resistance. And we need to nurture and build this in our children. I know we may not all, what I want to say is we may not all be able to be on the streets in places like Charlottesville and Ferguson, but I don't want you to hear that as letting you off the hook. Some people are dying. Some people are ill. Some people have to be more careful with the police because of their identity, their status. So I don't want you to let that off, don't you hear me let you off the hook. That's what I'm saying. But we all have a vital role to play. And we need more people showing up in Charlottesville and Ferguson and on the border and in San Diego on July 2nd and in Washington, D.C. on June 30th, right? We need more people showing up on the streets in all kinds of ways and not being silent. We also all have a vital role to play in making a stronger commitment to build something new in our communities, in our congregations, to make a stronger commitment to nurture healthy, vital, radically inclusive communities, and the powerful practice of this faith that helps us build a courageous and fierce embodied love and nurtures what is best in us as human beings. I know from talking with many of you that when you witnessed what happened in Charlottesville, you turned to your congregations for healing and to hold the trauma. But where we want to be a salve to the wounds of the world, we also must be a mirror to our own infliction of wounds, right? And this is what Brittany Packnett was talking about last night, right? About realizing that we reinforce supremacy and uphold it in ways we may not always realize, and that we all can fall victim to leaning back into moderation, right? And the comfort of life. We need communities that are really building something new, places of abundant love and deep justice. My prayer for we as an association of congregations and communities is that we answer both calls to hold each other in times of pain and to hold each other to account in acts of courageous love when our institutions create harm, in acts of courageous truth-telling when we as individuals inflict harm. Ours has never been a monolithic faith, and it does not have to be limited by the monocultural roots of its past. The promise of our faith means liberating ourselves from systems of dominance and exploitation that we all suffer under. The promise of our faith means making compassion a way of being. It means creating a collective sense of both community and responsibility. It holds the vision of a yet unrealized future where our collective survival, our liberation, and a practice of the fullness of our theology is possible. Now, when we stepped onto the streets in Charlottesville as faith leaders, we knew that our safety could not be guaranteed nor expected. We knew we were putting our lives at risk. Our faith, the call to love, that love is stronger than hate, gave us strength. But something else gave us strength, and that was the fact that we were not alone. Friends, this is no time to try to go it alone. We need to be building the strength of our communities even as we are resisting in the larger world. We as individual congregations can't be in this struggle alone. We as UUs can't be in this struggle alone. I was strengthened by the faith leaders who I stood shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Unitarian, Universalist, siding with love. Now is the time to get proximate and get closer and build stronger bridges across our faith, across our congregations, but also in deeper partnership and commitment with those most directly impacted by systems of injustice and oppression. Because here's the thing, theologically, our universalism says that no one is outside the circle of love, right? However, we must understand that in our lives and in the context of oppression and discrimination, that the circle never gets drawn wider from the center. The circle grows wider because the people who live at the margins, at the edges, who see how exclusion is happening, are leading and organizing and working to break those walls down. Right? So we all have to be standing in the margins, pushing for greater liberation for all people. That is the way we make the circle wide. This time we are living in is one of tremendous opportunity and needed change, and the health and strength of our communities and our commitment to this theology of love and justice and interdependence is crucial. And I know it's calling more from all of us. And I know the strain that can feel. And I know the strain of the daily despair and heartbreak. But I also know that our faith is strong. And if we let ourselves be held by it, it will give us what we need to keep on moving forward. And I know that we can hold one another in this work. We've been readying for it, my friends. We have been readying for years to grow our muscles for resistance and for courage and for solidarity. And I know this work, I know this moment that we are in, and it's not just this moment, it's many moments moving to this time, that it's going to change us. The work ahead is going to change us deeply. And that's why we are a living tradition, right? Because we don't need to be held by the past. We are always looking for the new revelation to guide our hearts and our spirits and to walk into something new. Right? I see that day when we will look back and see the changes we have made in our hearts, in our communities, in the practice of our faith and theology. And this won't come from some casual practice, right, or casual commitment. It will only take a greater commitment and generosity to one another and our communities that sustain courage and love. And it will mean new ways of living our faith. It will mean letting go in order to say yes, to reach out more boldly, lovingly, and faithfully with one another for justice, and it will take each of us finding our own call, our work, our place in the struggle, where our gifts can help bring something new, something life-giving into this world. May the spiritual community that we practice, may the spiritual communities that you lead and practice in your homes, in your hometowns, may it strengthen all of our hearts. May it give us courage. May we not be silent or shrink back from the demands of love. And may we hold one another as we follow new pathways of joy, of community, of change, of the unknown. And may we all be held by that deep practice of agape love that stirs in each and every one of our hearts. May it be so. Amen.
That, my friends, is the broader movement of which we are a part. That is why we do the things here. That is why we are looking to create a broader, bigger capacity to do our work here in Lafayette, in this little corner of Boulder County and beyond. That's why we're reaching out to Longmont. That's why we're connecting with the Boulder UU Church. That's why we're in Together Colorado. That's why. Because it's not time for us to be casual about our commitment to these Unitarian Universalist values. May it be so.